Welcome to the Collections by Michelle Brown Show, a show about people living between the lines, standing boldly in the crosshairs of their intersectionality as they create change. This episode is brought to you in partnership with the Center for Peace Counseling and Holistic Healing Services.
Welcome to Collections by Michelle Brown. I'm your host, Michelle Brown. Each week, we'll be talking with people living between the lines, standing boldly in the crosshairs of their intersectionality, and creating change. Today, I'm again joined by Betty Covertier. She's back. A relentless, outspoken, authentic voice and alternative perspective for the LGBTQ community, Betty returns to Collection by Michelle Brown to share her thoughts on the current political climate. She'll share her observation from her travels as we move towards the all-important 2018 midterm elections. Originally from Brooklyn, New York, where she was a city corrections officer, Betty was part of Atlanta's LGBTQ scene since the mid-1990s until her recent retirement. She volunteered at WRFG 89.3 FM, a nonprofit community radio station, beginning in 2002. She was the founder, producer, and host of Alternative Perspectives, an LGBTQ radio show that aired on the community-owned and operated station from 2006 until 2017. She has served in various capacities on many nonprofit organizations over the years, including the Atlanta Pride Outreach Chair, Atlanta HRC Steering Committee, co-chair of Georgians Against Discrimination Steering Committee, and the Atlanta LGBTQ Police Advisory Board. Betty also organized the first International Day Against Homophobia in Atlanta to coordinate the international events that raise awareness of community rights violations and to stimulate interest in LGBTQ civil rights work worldwide. Her energy, compassion, insightfulness, and hard work has been an incredible asset in the fight for LGBTQ equality. Since retiring, Betty keeps her eye on local and national political shenanigans, the LGBTQ community, and discovers more alternative perspectives as she travels about the country in her RV with her dogs, living out and proud on the world. Betty, welcome back to Collections by Michelle Brown. How are you today?
I am feeling good, and I thank you for the invite. I give me the opportunity to rant a little bit. But I haven't had a chance to do that, since not being on the radio in Atlanta anymore. But it's just there's so much going on out here. But I'm doing pretty good, I'm the health wise, and I'm sort of stationary at the moment, or I go from one campground to another, and get to see the different sites. In the area, though, I stay between Kissimmee, Orlando, and Claremont, which is like Central Florida. And I get to see all the little stuff that's going on in the area and stuff, and I've learned a lot. But doing good.
But there's so much going on. Now, one of the things that we talk about, like I know that when you you started, like, after, since, 2016, and you've been in Florida, and you said, you sort of watched and listened to how people have been, and, how you said how once someone told you to go home, go back to your own country, and you told them how you were from here, how has that changed?
Two years in, I mean, there's a lot of, I've met a lot of folks, some who are very progressive and very liberal and very much on the same, mindset as far as what's going on, okay? But since the 2016 elections and what happened after that, people have sort of kind of fallen silent because they don't know where people are at, and they don't, they're afraid, especially the people on the road, because most people who come out, you know, camping and stuff like that, they just kind of get away from it all, you know? But and there's not a whole lot of discussion about politics. But at the dog parks, which I go to a lot because I have dogs, there the conversation might be a little bit better. And people are still into their, you know, they're not knowing things like about Puerto Rico. I mean, there's been a lot of education. A lot of education regarding Puerto Rico since Hurricane Maria, and then all the chaos and stuff and the fiasco that, you know, has happened since then. So people read about it, you know, because it's actually in the papers down here in the South, and all of a sudden they're realizing that there's this other part of the United States of America in the middle of the water down here in the Caribbean, you know, who are American citizens, you know, and they just sort of kind of just look at you, shake their head, because they're really not understanding what's going on, okay? They just, you know that people are in need, and they didn't realize that they are U.S. citizens, and it hits them that this could happen to them also if it, you know, if they find themselves in a situation that's, you know, like it. But, and the administration sort of kind of ignores the citizens, you know, no matter where they are. But we just have an administration now that doesn't really care about the people, you know, so they're not concerned about, except for their own interests, you know, and it's the most corrupt administration ever in the history of the United States of America, okay? And people are beginning to realize that by what they're reading, you know, in the newspapers, because most of the people down here, they listen to Fox News, you know, so it's a constant battle trying to tell them, when I do get into conversations, that's not true, okay? And they look at you and say, what do you mean it's not true? I say, well, you need to go here, here, and here, and read, you know, on it, and get the real story of what's going on, okay? But you have to laugh sometimes, because it's just like, you know, I don't understand why people don't see, you know, but I know,
that's right.
You know, but they're, know, yeah, go ahead.
Well, before we really get into politics, okay, I want to ask you about something. Now, you and I met through the Human Rights Campaign. We were both on the Board of Governors, and I know, like, you know, when I got there, in fact, I was telling, we have a volunteer who's working, trying to build coalitions here in Michigan, who works for HRC, and I told her, I said, my first Board of Governors meeting, I recall them saying how, you know, that they weren't making progress, you know, they were making progress, but as far as women and people of color, well, they were able to hire a lot, but, you know, in the upper echelons, the governors, directors, you know, it just wasn't happening. You know, they just couldn't seem to keep us. And
wait a minute, let me get something straight, Michelle. Are you telling me that today, in 2018, HRC is still trying to build coalitions?
Well, you know, thank you. You know, what they're trying to do, I mean, and I'll tell you, I mean, and this is great. I went to they disbanded our steering committee, you know, when the economy went tanked up. We couldn't maintain the number of Federal Club members, so no dinner, no steering committee.
The money. You couldn't maintain the money, okay?
Let's make that
clear, okay?
We had a gathering here, and Chad Griffith, and we were talking, and he was saying, like, what they were trying to do was do a different take, because it used to be they would come in and basically want to run the show, you know. But it was like, now how do we work to support things? And some of the volunteers that I see, like right now, we're talking about getting out to vote and how we all have a vested interest and how do we work together, and not being the elephant in the room, but being like a cheerleader or using ways to bring people together. So, you know, I'm going like, wow, well, you know, this is different, you know. And although there were some people who said, you know, we have to get, you know, a federal club going into all this, Chad and some of the other people were like, you know, well, we need to get to know the community, you know, work with the community, you know, not the community work with us, but work with the community. So I was going like, oh, okay, well, we'll see. And I will say I've had great conversations. The young lady who I've been working with is a person of color. And then what hits, you know, what hits? The HRC Foundation chief resigns after using the N-word. And mm-hmm. It was sort of like, to me, it's like, well, I guess we haven't come that far, you know.
Right.
But this is our organization, you know, and I, you know, I've talked to people who worked there and they said, oh, well, we were just shocked, and now we're doing all of this training amongst ourselves. But it's sort of like that upper echelon, you know, what needs to change in our organizations? What do you think about this?
Well, you know, to me, in the years that have passed since I haven't been involved, okay, because it's been since like 2008 or so that I haven't been involved. It's like 10 years now. But when I first started, I saw it as a promise, okay? I saw it like a way of bringing people together, enlisting, you know, those who were not part of it at the time, which was the Hispanic community, the Black community, mm-hmm. you know, and bringing them into, you know, because my whole thing was, hey, these people are the lobbyists for us in Washington, D.C., and they're fighting for our rights. This is how I used to, because being on diversity, you know, trying mm-hmm. to recruit folks to join up, you know, and mm-hmm. And I believed that they were sincere about what they wanted to do, okay? But the problem is always, as I grow older and gain more wisdom, I guess, at least I hope, mm-hmm. that, you know, the HRCs of the world is just it's a duplicate of the bigger picture of what our whole system is, politically wise, because it is a political organization, but it's on a small scale. But they still have their tiers. You know, you have the people who have and the people who don't have, mm-hmm. and the people they try to use in order to promote so they can get money in so they can support. You know, it's just like the regular system that we have. You know, you get your taxes. The rich people don't pay nothing because they have the loopholes, but we have to support everything, and everything that gets done to help us, we're paying for through our taxes or whatever. Okay, so the HRCs of the world is just like a smaller version of the system mm-hmm. itself, and they have a hierarchy, okay, and this hierarchy is just like our politicians or our legislators who we're supposed to, like, you know, they forget that they work for us, and we mm-hmm. allow them to, mm-hmm. and we allow them to forget because we treat them like royalty, okay? And they're not royalty. They were elected. You know, they are public servants paid for by taxpayers' money. They're supposed to be listening to us, not the lobbyists, not the people who are going to pay them and buy them, okay? And what I see is like organizations like HRC and those bigger ones, you know, that are out there, that are just about the money, because they have to have the money to pay the salaries that they have for the corporations that they have built, and the buildings and all the staff, and, you know, and just to keep their place at the table. If they're lobbyists, they're dealing with Washington, D.C., and they have to have money to be able to talk at that table. So to me, you know, I'm sure that there's folks that are sincere in what they want to happen, but unfortunately I don't think, because even our system tells us, you know, the government, the administration, the whole thing of how we operate. Because sometimes I sit back and I say, are we living in an illusion? You know, that is this just like an illusion that we think we're a democracy, that we think that we're free, that we think, you know, we have all these freedoms and whatnot. But then something happens like 2016, and all of a sudden we say, oh, my God, that could just disappear overnight. Because if one man says, you know, boom, gone, you know, there goes our rights, okay? Mm-hmm. There goes our freedoms. I mean, right now it's the whole mm-hmm. thing with the media, that they're free speech. They're trying, mm-hmm. you know, they, you know, So it, to me, you know, I'm sure that Chad means well, but then there's still people, you know, in that board of directors and the people from the foundation that, and when I saw that article about the N-word, about the director of the foundation, okay, she's the head of the board. She's the board of, of the foundation. Yet you have the foundation is the money arm of HRC. Okay, so that's the first thing I said to myself. Well, when she got fired, Chad decided, you know, just then she resigned after that, is that they don't want the people who are the liberals and the progressives and who will start hollering and shouting and screaming about that N-word that was used and all of a sudden just cut off the money. I think the decision was based more on will money disappear because of this. Okay,
but,
so they had to correct it right away so that the people wouldn't get insulted or offended or threatened to do away with donations and so forth and so on, you know.
Okay, you did what was expedient, you know. She said it, it's wrong, you got rid of it. But where is the real discussion that within the LGBT community, there's racism, there's classism, and it's still going on. I mean, I was in a part of Detroit which is getting gentrified, and there were some youngish gay men, and, you know, I was sort of like being a fly in the wall listening to them. And I said, now I know at one moment they would probably say that we should all like lock arms because we're oppressed people, you know, and I'd be their sister in that. But in listening to them talk, they were the colonizers. They were, you know, the only time that they would talk about being oppressed and being, you know, persecuted, like, and connecting with people of color was when some of their rights were being denied, but they didn't. They were really
as gay people.
Their privilege,
is this group? Is this group of folks that you were listening to white or black?
Well, come on, now you know they were white. I said gentrifying.
Gentrifying. Okay. All right. I just wanted to get the picture straight in my head. You know what I mean?
And, you know, they were in an area where the community of black and people of color used to live and are being pushed out because of this gentrification. And it was like they owned it. I mean, like they had come and they had owned it and no connection with the community whatsoever. Although I know if someone had called them, you know, gay, fag, whatever, then they'd be up in arms and think that we should rally.
Yeah, but we have the same thing. We have, you know, the log cabin Republicans, for instance. I mean, you know, I've never had any kind of anything in common with them, and I never understood how they could support some of the candidates that would run back then under the Republican banner, you know, that never acknowledged their homosexuality, okay? So it was like, okay, what are you supporting this, you know, these people for? I used to ask, you know, I used to talk with them and stuff, and I used to go to different events and stuff, but I just never understood. And I know, and HRC has a lot of Republicans in it also. They're not all Democrats, you know, so their mindset is still in that area of, you know, the white privilege. And that's sort of kind of, you know, I'm going to tell you, I know, because I have felt, you know, I sometimes compare and say, you know, because my skin is light, I have had the, I've walked in somewhere and people can't tell. They can't tell from my name. They can't tell from my skin color what I am. So they think I'm white, okay? And I know and I have felt that white privilege because as soon as, they find out that I'm Puerto Rican, okay, the attitude changes, okay? So I know that there is white privilege. I know that that exists because I have felt it, okay? And it has always left me puzzled, you know, but I don't say that I understand it 100%, but I know that it exists, and I know that it blinds. I know that it doesn't allow you to see beyond and see into the issues that are being talked about because they haven't experienced them. Okay, they don't know how it feels. Okay, they can't, you know, touch it. It's not tangible to them, not emotionally, not you know, tangibly. You know, they just, you know, it just, they just don't understand it. Okay, so they get a little confused when we talk about white privilege. Okay, how they have it and others don't, and so forth and so on. But I know that as a Puerto Rican who has light skin, I know that I've been treated differently, okay, when people mm-hmm. thought I was white, okay? So mm-hmm. it just, you know, and that's existed like forever, because even when I my first job when I was like 18 years old, you know, people didn't know what I was there. There was all white folks mm-hmm. that I worked with when I was in the, this is 1965, okay? Mm-hmm. And then one day they decided to ask me what I was because they couldn't tell from my last name. And yeah, my coworker said, and by the way, what are you? I found Puerto Rican. And what their response to me was, oh, you're on welfare. Oh, that's what they said back to me. I had never heard of welfare. I had to go home and ask my mother, what is welfare? My father worked every day of his life. You know, so it's like, and that's all I knew. He left at 6 o'clock in the morning. He got back at 6 o'clock in the evening, you know. And my mom was home. She cooked 7 days a week. I mean, this is welfare. What the hell is welfare? I had no idea what it was. Yeah, but this is how they mm-hmm. related, you know?
For you.
So
know,
it's just. Mm-hmm.
But one of the points that you make, too, okay, because, okay, it's about politics, too. And mm-hmm. like you, I think that it's important that people of color are at the table and that our voices are being heard. And, mm-hmm. you know, there is that level of access, you know, like lobbying and all that normally that often we can't do. And by participating in lobby days, sometimes we can get it before someone and make a point. Mm-hmm. Now we're looking at a time, you know, since 2016 when it's all really like supposed to be all hands on deck. So which identity, you know, do we wear the most, or how do we pull it all together? I mean, we saw, you know, after 2016, after his election, we saw the first march on women. We've seen the second march on women. We've seen the Me Too movement. And we've seen more women, people of color, running for mm-hmm. and getting elected. Mm-hmm. But then you flip and you sort of see all this other stuff that's threatening us. So it's like, we're making headway, but then at the same point, we've got this clear and present danger mm-hmm. going forward till at least 2020, when hopefully we can get them out. What have you seen from the first Women's March through all of these changes in the elections, and now we're coming into that really important, and which we've all been saying, grab them by the midterms. Midterms are right around the corner. You're there
right.
in Florida. Ten.
10 weeks.
You know.
10 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, this is now the midterms are going to be more important than the 2020, because if we don't make a change mm-hmm. now, there's not going to be a 2020 for us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right.
Mm-hmm.
We have to make the change now, because if we don't, there's no telling how far this administration will go in order to shut us up. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And they will be extreme. They will be extreme about it. Okay, and that's my belief. So if 2018 doesn't rock the senses of everybody out there as to what and how it's going to affect each and every one of us, okay, they're buried under a rock somewhere and they don't understand. They don't understand, or they don't see it, or they just don't believe it, or you know. Because the way I look at it, I don't care how much his base is in support of him, there's still not enough of them to beat us.
Mm.
And when I say us, I mean women, men, 18-year-olds, the millenniums. I mean everybody who understands that we are in danger as a society, okay, regardless of what we are. You know, as far as our color, our race, our religion, et cetera, because this is a time when we have to say, what is it that is going to make us become the society that we want? that we're accustomed to, that the freedoms that we believe we have, okay? That if I'm a woman, I'm able to, you know, be my own, you know, determinant as far as how I'm going to live my life, whether it be if I decide to have an abortion or not, or whether I'm a lesbian, or whether I'm married or not married, or any of those cultural things, whether I'm Hispanic or Black, you know, white, whatever it is, okay? Mm-hmm. We have to come together as a society to bring us back to that place where we're going to have the choices that we can have to live the life that we want to live individually. Otherwise, if we don't do, if 2018 is, you know, fizzles out, there won't be a 2020. I'm telling you that right now. There won't be a, because this man, this person, this, not even person, I can't even, you know, I can't even, it's just, I can't bring my say, to say, you know, POTUS, I can't say, I just can't bring, I haven't been able to say that in all this time. I uh-huh. Drumpf, that's how I refer to Drumpf, uh-huh. Okay? Uh-huh. And the people that he has surrounding him, okay? And what, I mean, they're power struck. They think that they're supposed to be in charge of everything and anything, okay, and that the people don't count. They have totally, totally forgotten that they work for the people, because we don't even exist. We don't even exist in their vocabulary. If you hear them talking and stuff, it's not, they don't refer to us and what's good for us. Okay, they have this imaginary thing about how this country is supposed to be, and that they are in charge and they'll be ruling it, and that's how they're always, you know, referencing it. You know, it just, you know. No, 2018 has to be the time. We got 10 weeks. And I think that the things that have happened in Florida, in Georgia, in other places, in other states, you know, in Virginia, I mean, there's New York. I mean, there's elections that have been won, okay, that says a change is coming, okay? The wave is coming, okay? We the people have to make sure we can't mm-hmm. get complacent. That's the thing. We cannot mm-hmm. get complacent. We can't just sit back and say, "Oh, somebody else will take care of it." No.
Now, you were right. You're right there in Florida, okay? Mm-hmm. Andrew Gillum.
Yep.
They didn't give him a chance.
They didn't give him a chance.
Less money. Everything, and here he is.
He's the only non-millionaire. He's the only one that's not a millionaire.
So, mm-hmm. what did you see happening there? And you know, I saw, you know, I mean, like they said, well, more Republicans voted, but the number of people who came out and did vote.
The numbers came out. No, Michelle, the numbers for the Democrat came out a little while ago. And the Democratic turnout in Florida almost doubled that of 2014 for primaries, for mm-hmm. primary. And this is only a primary. There was almost 4 million people, mm-hmm. okay? There was like almost double for the Democratic mm-hmm. primary, okay? Because usually that's the one that's the least amount of people that come out for primaries. Okay, but this double the 2014, double, and that just came out earlier.
And you know, that happening in Michigan, we had a primary. They ran. I mean, they had, based on the last one, they were running out of ballots because more mm-hmm. people came out. People are coming out. I mean, for the primaries. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's sort of.
Yeah, you know, I mean, this
well,
is.
How do
this
we
is,
keep that from fizzling out?
Well, because we have to keep our eye open. We have to make sure that they don't try to suppress the vote, because they're trying to suppress it in every way possible, even to the fact that in Texas, you know, the story came out earlier today about how they're taking away passports from American citizens because
mm-hmm.
they were brought onto this earth by a midwife, and that there had been a case back then that was settled in the 90s or something or other about these midwives that had said, you know, pleaded guilty to writing up, you know, some birth certificates that happened, you know, 60 years ago, okay? So people now, they're facing, you know, they're 40 years old, 50 years old, and their credentials are being taken away from them. So that means that when it comes time to vote, they're not going to be able to prove who they are. Okay, so this has to do with the voting. I mean, this all of this stuff is not because of immigration or because of a wall or because of these people are criminal. No, they're working United States citizens who are being, you know, like harassed, okay, by our government in order to put and there's so much going on about, you know, the voter suppression stuff. You know, in Randolph, in Georgia, Randolph County, they were trying to close down 7 of the 9 polling places in the poorest black district in southern Georgia, okay? The ACLU jumped right on in, okay, and declared it unconstitutional. They can't do that. So that was blocked. They can't close them down. And the reasons what they were giving because of why they were closing them down is because they weren't up to code on the handicap stuff. and there's been voting going on in those polling places, you know, for years. Nobody has cried, you know, about there aren't handicap, you know, coding things out of date and stuff. No, nobody was crying before this year because they understand what's happening. They understand better, I think, than we do. You know, we liberals, progressives, because sometimes we don't get deep into it, you know, but the one thing that Republicans do is they dig deep into whatever it is, and they figure out how people feel about things, okay? And then they attack on that kind of stuff, all right? So, and they see all the vulnerabilities, okay? They see all of them, and they use them. And we still haven't learned how to not be civil, okay? We need to be civil all the time as Democrats, and because we think that's the polite thing to do and that's the correct thing to do, and we're not supposed to be cussing and we're not supposed to be attacking and we're not supposed to be digging up all kinds of crap and stuff, you know, from the past about people and whatnot, you know. But they do it, and it works. And it works for them. But, again, I'm going to say, whatever that 34%, 37%, or whatever it is that is the base of this administration, that is not enough to win. And that's what we have to understand, that if we all get together, okay, whether you're black, you're white, Hispanic, Chinese, Asian, whatever you are, and you're able to vote in this country, that's what you're supposed to do. Okay, and like I said, when I said I'm traveling 500 miles to get back to Georgia so I can vote for Stacey, okay, and I don't want to hear somebody say to me, I couldn't get to my polling place. No. You start now. You start now trying to figure out how you're going to do that.
How to get
okay?
That's right.
Betty,
we're going to take our first break here, and we're going to talk some more about this because, I mean, this is just like, to me, one of the most important things that we need to be talking about.
Oh, absolutely!
About right now.
And I wanna talk about how you asked something about what happened. What was, you know, between Gillum and Stacey? What is it that happened? How did people, you know? I have my notions on that too. So when we come back,
okay,
maybe we can talk about that for a minute.
Definitely. Okay.
Yes. Okay.
This episode of Collections by Michelle Brown is brought to you in partnership with the Center for Peace Counseling and Holistic Healing Services, bringing balance to your mind, body, and spirit. For more information or to schedule an appointment, visit the center at www.thecenterforpeacellc.com.
Back here on Collections by Michelle Brown, and we're talking about, to me, what is the hottest topic now, about voting, getting out to vote, and who's coming out to vote. I mean, you know, one of the things like we talked about, I mean, we have had more people of color, women, you know, LGBT, I mean, openly trans, all these people who are running, and they're getting elected.
And winning. Yes.
Okay, so Florida and Georgia. I mean, these are not the places where you would expect to see, I mean, you know, Georgia has had African-Americans, but on this level, can you talk about that? That's where you were headed right before we took our break.
Let me touch on Georgia for a minute and Stacey, okay?
Okay.
What I think, at the time, I mean, Stacey started years ago. She knew where she was going, okay? She was, at the time, she was the minority leader in the House of Georgia, okay, in the House of Representatives, okay? But 2-3 years ago, I saw her speaking up in White County. White County is upstate where I used to live in Habersham, which is, White County is next door. And she went up there. She went to other districts and other counties to talk during from 2-3 years ago. What she did, okay, she went to talk to the people that she didn't see every day because she's in Atlanta, okay? And so she went out into the, there's 159 districts in Georgia. She touched on all of them. She touched on every single one of them. She went door to door. She actually talked to people who were different than her, okay? She went after the moderates. She went after the Republicans. She talked to them, introduced herself. And they, in the conversations, you find out, you know, who she is while she's finding out who they are and what their needs are, okay? This is what she did, and I know that for a fact. And I believe that Gillum did the same thing because he's the mayor of Tallahassee, which is all the way up north, okay, on 10, all the way up there. And he wiped out that Lady Graham, who was the favorite because she was the daughter of a former governor, okay, in Broward County, which is all the way on the other side in the southern part, which is like Fort Lauderdale and all that, okay? So, and he wiped her out there where they thought that she would be able to hold her own, and she didn't. And he came from behind. Because he went out there and he talked to the people. I saw, you saw the ads. I mean, he had ads up there, and it wasn't putting anybody down or anything. What he was saying was, his own life story about he was poor, and who told me that I could be mayor of, you know? Who told me that I could, you know, a black man can be this, you know? I've done that, you know. He's not a millionaire. He's just a working fool, okay, like the rest of us, okay? But he went and he talks to the people. And no, that's the whole thing. And I think that's how the transgender folks won. I think that's how Ocasio won in New York. They went out into the district, okay, themselves. They didn't just send out their volunteers. They went out themselves and knocked on people's doors, sat on their patios, went into their living rooms, you know. It was more than just a commercial on TV. It was live, you know, up front, and tell me what the problems are so I know. Okay? And I think that's how most of these folks that have won in today's world and the way that things are, okay, because they went to the people to find out what their issues are.
That as you see, I mean, there's something about younger voters and voters who have maybe traveled, lived around and stuff to where they're, and people who are, as they say, woke, who are listening to all of these things, because I know that, I mean, I lived in Atlanta a while back, okay, but I didn't stay there. I mean, I wasn't there that long, but I know that people would say, well, you know, you're cool in Atlanta, but you don't want to go here or there, especially after dark. And the fact that you said that Stacey Abrams went all over and talk to everybody.
Oh, yeah.
That says that there's a shift. And I think that and when you look at the voters, although we still have some young people, youngish, who are voting, who say that the Republicans are doing it, but the people who are energized and are coming out are young. They're millennials. They're even a little older, but they're people who are out there who are coming out of the woodwork and who are hearing this message.
It's the 18-year-old that I like because they have you know they are experiencing a case through unfortunate circumstances and tragedies. They are experiencing what the government won't do for them, okay, and how they still, regardless of how many get killed in these schools, high schools and whatnot, that the government still will not do. Go up against the NRA and all this other kind of stuff, and they and these schools like the one here in Florida that the 17 died and stuff. These kids are so aware, okay, and they're so like intelligent. But then if I asked around, I find out that they have debates in that school. I never had a debate when I was in school in in the 1960s and 50s and stuff. There was no debating, but they're debating the actual stuff that is happening. Okay, so they're getting the information. They're getting the both sides of the story, and they're determining what it is. They're making up their own minds as to what is right and what is wrong. Okay, and that's I love that about that because they are taking they're taking up. You know, they're out there still. You know, the kids are still out there doing their rallies and their protests. They were up at the somewhere here in Florida, and I'm trying to think of which one they were up at some federal building that had to do with guns, you know, and they were protesting and stuff. So they're still active. They're still, you know, doing. They haven't given up, okay? And these kids are going to be able to vote in November.
That's right.
Okay, they voted in the primaries because a lot of them are 18 already. And there was the biggest registration in ever for 18-year-olds in Florida, ever. Okay? I mean, they've registered, and then they went around, you know, they did a national thing, and they registered millions of 18-year-olds across the nation. All right? So, I mean, and that's going to become evident, and it's becoming evident because of all the victories throughout the nation in the different states and whatnot, okay, so that you know that that has already, you know, that power has already been put out there, okay, with these young people and stuff. So it's just, you know, the main problem that we as the people is that we get complacent sometimes and that we lay back and say somebody else is going to do that. Well, nobody else is going to do that. We have to stay vigilant. We have to stay aware. We have to be informed. We have to make sure that we're not getting, because now what they have, the algorithms and the stuff that's on the Facebook, and they're feeding false stories. I read an article the other day that they've already gotten the conservative Facebook employees out there putting false stuff on Facebook to counteract what liberals and Democrats and progressives are writing about or letting people know about and stuff. So, and they're attacking that through the, and they're right there. You know, they're part of the Facebook thing. Okay? So, and that's the big thing. You know, there's a whole lot of, you know, I'm not a tech person and stuff, really. I can barely understand how it all works, but I mean,
you know what, that's the beauty of young people. Young people get it. Okay, and they might be using Facebook, but they are on Instagram, Twitter.
Oh yeah,
they know how to
merge all these things at one time. You know what I mean?
when the youth had the march against violence, I mean, all the people that they brought out, these were high school kids. You know,
right.
We're talking about what they saw, and they did.
That's
they
right.
called them out and said, we'll be able to vote. And they made sure that there was space for everybody on the platform. You know, that is just like, this is the future. You know, this is
right.
The
and these young kids, the 18-year-olds, they don't care if you're white or you're black or you're Hispanic or you're Jewish or you're Catholic or Baptist. They don't care. They don't care if you're gay or straight. They don't care. They just want to know that you're in the same mindset and that the freedoms that you want for yourself, you want for me too. Okay? So that's, I mean, and that's the beauty of it. That is the beauty of it. And that's what we as adults as supposedly the elders, have to really understand, you know, and everybody in between. And the people who don't understand are those 34-37% or whatever it is that support the current administration. They really don't get it. They don't see it. They just don't see it, okay? Mm-hmm. they just don't see it. But we, as those groups that they look at us and say that we are a minority because they slot us, well, we're not in the minority if we get all together, okay? We're not the minority. We will be the majority, okay? Don't classify us into all these little groups. No. We're one group. We're one people. You know, we're one society, one community, because this is what we believe, and it's universal amongst the other, you know, what that's, you know, 60% of the people, okay? It's universal, all right? And that's what we have to get into our heads, that we are the majority, that it is universal amongst us. Yes, we have our own individual, you know, complaints and qualms and whatever it is that we think needs to be adjusted and fixed and remedied and whatever else. Yeah, but right now, what we need is our society remedied and get it back to where it was so that we can continue a life that we know, otherwise it'll be unrecognizable, and this administration will not hesitate to annihilate and get rid of those groups that they don't think will ever support them. Okay, they won't. You know, I mean, this is why they're not. You know, all these nationalist kind of groups and stuff see this administration as their thing because they're afraid of losing power, number one, because they know that they're not multiplying at the same rate as the rest of us, okay?
Mm-hmm. Well, you because, know, we keep talking about this blue wave coming, but you know what? As you look at that blue wave, I mean, here in Michigan, we had Rashida Tlaib, who will be a Muslim woman going to Congress.
Right.
We have Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez from New York. Stacey Abram, Andrew Gillum, and so many others who are people of color, who are queer. This blue wave is not just, you know, a blue Democratic wave. It's really a paradigm shift in power.
Yes, and that's what everybody has to see. This is not just one group, okay? This is not just one ethnicity. This is just not one culture. This is, we have become one people out of necessity at this point, okay, if that's how you want to look at it. But we need to recognize it, and we need to do what we need to do, okay? And the remedy is that we have to vote in November, no matter where we are. November becomes the urgent activity that we have to do, okay, that it's a must. There are no excuses of why you cannot, okay? It's like 12 hours, the polls, they have early voting in most places, you know, on the day of that Tuesday, November 6th, it's at least from 7 to 7, no matter where you are. It's 12 hours. You can, you know, if you need to get up early, if you have to be at the job at 9 o'clock, well, then be at the polling place at 7 a.m. so you can vote before you go to work, okay? I mean, it's a one-day thing, you know, it's a one-day thing. And I don't care, you start planning now, if you have to carpool, if you have to do whatever it is, you get together with your neighbors, you make sure that everybody is able to get to where they need to go, you know? And it's just like, once I get up there, I'll be available to drive people, you know, after I'm going to try to get up there early, then vote early, so I can be available if people need in that area or somewhere else. I'll come back down to Atlanta, whatever it is, you know, once I let people know. If you need people to be there to drive people, I'll be there. Just tell me what corner to be on, okay?
Everywhere, I mean, and I've heard from people from across the country. I heard of Pam Harris, who's a lesbian running for city council in Oakland. There's Maria Haddon, who's running in Chicago. Places where before women of color, queer people didn't have never had a voice.
Right.
Why, you know, I love that you are so passionate about voting. And, you know, and, like, we hear young people who are getting it. We hear some of it. But you hear a lot of people, like, you know, but like you said, any reason. Oh, it looks like it was going to rain. The line might be.
No, I don't care. Put your raincoat on. Put your goggles on. Wait, whatever, your boots, whatever they call those things these days, you know. Your raincoat, umbrella. Get wet. It's only water, okay? I mean.
What has kept you this passionate about not only politics,
because
I've never, once I became an activist
in Atlanta, and I prior to that, I didn't know about lobbying and all this other kind of stuff. I was one of those folks like, okay, I mean, there's these people that we have to sort of kind of bow down to, and we can't just call them any name or anything. We can't do this, we can't do that, until I figured out about the lobbying thing, and I was taught how to go and lobby. And then I was told that they must come out to me because I am a constituent, okay, and that when I... if I'm in under the Gold Dome there and I give the usher a request to see my representative, he is obligated, she or he is obligated to come out to see me, okay? And if they don't, they're in violation of my constituency, okay? So, and when I understood that whole notion that these people are supposed to answer to me, when I got that in my head, okay, because prior to that, I had never learned anything about politics. At home, we never talked about politics when I was a teenager and stuff, you know. My father read the Daily News, okay, mm-hmm. You know, so it was all about New York City, and what was, you know, and it's like, you know, politics was just not a part of the conversation at any time in my home. And as I grew older, I mean, I became a little bit more interested and more interested, and then when I hit Atlanta, what got me into the whole spectrum of the activism is that there was such a separation between the white and the black, okay? And my life had always been, you know, mixed, okay? I mean, there was no separation for me. My home was always like, you know, there was always black people, there was always white people, there was always Hispanic people, there was always any, whatever you were, I didn't care, okay? And nobody cared. So it was like, you know, that's not, you know, when I hit Atlanta, I said, man, something's got to, that's how, one of the reasons I joined Atlanta Pride, and one of the reasons I, you know, I joined the HRC and some of the other organizations that I belong to down in Atlanta and stuff, because I just wanted to understand, you know, how it was that people were looking at this, and why is it that the white lesbians can't hang out with the black lesbians? You know, we do have something in common, girls, you know? That's what I used to tell them all the time. We do have something in common, okay? You know, but it was like, you know, they just had their own separate clubs. They went dancing in different places, and it was like, oh. So I joined the white organization so I could understand. I always hung out with the blacks and Hispanics. So, but I joined the white organization so I can understand their mentality and where they were coming from. And it winds up that there was fear. They were afraid. They were intimidated. They were, you know, there was all kinds of reasons, you know. And likewise for the black, you know, lesbians saying, oh, they don't want us, you know. I don't really care if they don't want you, okay? I don't care if they don't want me. We're a community, and we're trying to achieve certain things, you know? And why are you afraid of my friend over here? You know, she's not going to hit you, you know? It's like, I mean, you know, and that went on with the transgender community also, because they were also a little bit skittish about which, you know, because the transgender community is a very tight-knit, you know? But even the trans, I remember, you know, talking with the transgender community and stuff, and how they were, you know, afraid to come to those events where there were, you know, the white lesbians and black lesbians together, and then they felt that they would be shunned, you know, that they wouldn't become a part of, you know, and that I said, no, come on, you know, like my passion comes from the fact that we have more in common then we have differences. That's where my passion is, okay? The fact that I want people to see that, you know? And I used to write about it back then and everything like this, you know? And I was always, you know, putting stuff up when talking, you know, about it on the radio, when I had the radio show in Atlanta and stuff. I mean, for years, we have more in common than we have differences. And that's what people have to understand. You know, that's and it's true. Like even John McCain said that too. You know, so it's like the Republican said that. You know what I mean? So It is. When I don't care who we are, where you come from and stuff, there's some simple things that we all want. We all want to, we want to be loved. We want to be calm. We want to be, have a decent kind of, life. We want to have, if we have kids, we want to be able to raise them, provide for them. We want to be able to eat every day. We want to be able to, live somewhere, that's decent or whatever. It doesn't have to be fancy or anything. But, we have more in common than we have differences. Our needs and our wants don't differ that much. And the more I talk to people from different nationalities now and stuff like that, and we talk about our childhood, it's like, gee, we used to do that too, Wow, we had that tradition. We had that tradition too, And I'm Hispanic, and they may be Irish or, Scottish or some from somewhere else in Europe somewhere, So, but they had those traditions just like I had my traditions from my family in Brooklyn, okay? So, and it doesn't matter where you come from and what exotic place, there's traditions that people experience that are similar, no matter what part of the world you come from, okay? But I need to tell one story, though.
Okay.
And I want one story, which I think you're in meeting up the people that believe the fake news, for instance, okay?
Uh-huh.
I actually met, I won't, no names, I actually met the Russian lady at the dog park. And we got to talking and whatnot. We actually got onto Facebook, we friended each other and whatnot. Eventually I had to do away with her on that. I had to sort of kind of, because I had my friends from Atlanta in the politics were asking me if somebody had hacked my Facebook and it was there a Russian bot. Answering my posts and stuff. And as our conversations grew and they got more complicated and more, it was like, okay, so where are you getting your stuff from? Okay. And she kept insisting that they didn't listen to the TV or anything like that. I said, but, where'd you get this from? Because she was going back years, bringing up all kinds of different kind of things and comparing and in other words reinforcing and agreeing with the Trump, okay? And I was like, I even had to send her information to my brother, who is FBI, okay, was retired, and I asked him to check on her and my brother suggested I should just very politely just sort of kind of do away with her because he didn't like what he saw, okay? and then my political friends, in Atlanta were asking me, one of my cousins, in fact, from, he's not in Florida now, I'm thinking he's up on the East Coast somewhere, but he got into a back and forth with her. And I said, uh-oh.
Uh-oh, watch out.
He's very well informed, very articulate, and he was challenging her to everything, and she was coming back with these articles that were just ridiculous, And then finally he said, who is this loony bin you got on your thing? So at that point, I had to do away with it, But it's interesting because with everything that's going on, and then you encounter something like this, and all of a sudden it sort of kind of all falls into place, and you understand why people are thinking the way they're thinking because they're getting this stuff from somewhere. You know what I mean? And they're referring to these all these articles that are just outdated, or coming from all these conservative websites. Okay, and they're taking it as truth. And there's nothing that you can say to convince them that they're not reading the right stuff,
No, there's nothing you can say. I mean, they are just on that.
I know. I mean, other than that, she's fine. She's got a couple of kids. I've met them, and we go to the dog park still. We still talk and stuff, but I try to stay away from the politics. Yeah, every now and then she'll send me another article. I sort of delete it because I don't even want to deal with it, But it's just like I just put it in its proper place, and I said, okay, this is why that 34, 37% or whatever it is, this is why they think that way. precisely what information that she's getting, all these other folks are getting the same stuff. You know?
Yeah, they are. Well, we're going to take our next break, and then we come back. I'm going to take us back to the beginning and get your thoughts on where we go from here. So we'll be right there.
Collections by Michelle Brown airs every Thursday at 7 p.m. You can subscribe now and listen to the podcast on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, or SoundCloud. Be sure to like the Collections by Michelle Brown Facebook page and mark your calendar so you never miss an episode.
Back here with Betty, and we've been talking about a little bit of everything. But Betty, when we started out, you know, I talked about, and you and I both talked about how, you know, wanting to be engaged, you know, wanting to have, you know, a seat at the table, how we became involved with organizations that to try to amplify our voices. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's gone all over the place. I think that in some ways, you know, after marriage, I mean, like, suddenly they gave us something and we all came together and we fought and marched and talked and about marriage. And then marriage got it, and we haven't, I mean, although we know that there are a lot of, there's still hate crimes, we still don't have Enda, you know, we have president who is like trying to erase everything, you know, he didn't recognize Gay Pride Month. I mean, where do we go from here? If you were to speak to a young Betty who's looking, who was where you were and is coming, and she came to you and she said, you know what? What do we need to be doing to move our community forward? What are the things that we need to still think about, and what do we need to do to get there?
Well, we need to do the same things that we needed to do back, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and not depend on the big organizations. I still believe that. I still believe that we could get together and we could accomplish, because Gillum, okay, proved it to us that it's not the money, it's the boat, okay?
Uh-huh.
He won, and that's what he used to say. He just said it again this morning. It's not the money, it's the boat, okay? We have to acknowledge the power that we have, because we hold the power. We just don't know how to use it, okay? Because nobody ever taught us. The young people are learning, and they understand the lobbying stuff, and they understand that you have to stay vocal and that you have to stay present, that you have to keep, you know, being and harassing them and agitating them, okay? And you have to just keep your voice loud. Okay, no matter how many times they tell you to shut up, no, refuse to shut up. You gotta keep reminding them that they work for you. Okay, and that and when it, you know, election time, you're gonna vote them out. You know, the people who are elected have to understand that the power that the people have will determine whether they're gonna keep those jobs that they have, or they're gonna have to go find another profession, because there's too many of them that go in there and make careers out of it. Okay, they get too comfortable. They don't care. They get lobbyists. The lobbyists are paying them off. They're doing legislation that's going to support the corporations that are paying the lobbyists, and they ignore what the needs of the people are, because most corporations don't care, because the corporations think that they're people too, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So we have to, the Patriot Act has to go away, okay? That's number one, so the corporations don't keep thinking that they're people too, okay? That's one of the things that has to be done away with. And I think, you know, most of the folks at the Warrens and the Bernies and all that, they're working on that kind of stuff, and that's great. But we have to not just simply concentrate on our own individual, like, okay, I'm Puerto Rican, I have to worry only about Puerto Rican. No, I have to worry about the whole society that I belong to, and that means Puerto Rican, it means Latvian, it means, you know, the same-sex marriage rights, our voices, our right to be able to marry and continue to get married without, you know, being harassed. It means the religious freedoms, and that they cannot use religion against us. Okay. You know, because my lifestyle to me doesn't affect anybody. It doesn't do good or bad. It doesn't affect them in any way. How they can determine what services they're going to provide to me based on their personal religious beliefs and stuff, that's their belief. And that's how you want to live. I respect that. But don't inflict that on me. Okay, and you know, all these things we're going through with the stores that don't have to service people because of their religious beliefs. That's crazy. That's just insane stuff. Okay, to me, we have to stand our ground. You know, and not meaning with guns and stuff like that. We just have to be principled about it, and we have to stand up for our rights. We have to speak up. We can't be afraid. Okay, we can't be afraid to say what we think. Okay, because I'm dealing with right now, part of my stationary stuff is because I'm so unsure about the environment out there politically wise. Okay, I don't know how people would react. You know, I don't know if I'm safe. I travel alone. So I found myself a safe zone, and I'm trying to wait it out. Okay, before I journey into the Alabamas of the world and the Mississippis and all these other places, you know. But I mean, I've been to Southern Alabama last year, and that they were pretty cool there. But all of this stuff hadn't really ignited to this point, and people still were not, you know, it was still early on. It was just past the election stuff, so we hadn't really been, you know, really noticing all the stuff that was going on, just simple as that. But it's just, it's a little different. People are just beating up on people now just because, I mean, people are killing each other. People are, you know, just because they believe something and the other person, they think that they could do whatever they want to them, you know, and that is justified because hate has taken over. Okay, because it's like, you know, they've been enabled by an administration that just preaches the difference of, you know, between people and that, you know, there's the better and the worse, you know, and that's not, you know, that's, it's just not, it's not a good thing. Okay, but this is what people are believing, and they're acting on it, and it's dangerous. Uh-huh. And I still have my Hillary Clinton sticker on my RV. You know what I mean? I don't feel like getting shot at. You know? I mean, like, it's just. I mean, but that's my own thing. You know, because I want to feel safe. I've never, you know, no matter where I've lived, and I've lived in all kinds of different neighborhoods and, you know, integrated, non-integrated. I mean, I've just, you know, places I've been, stuff, and I've never been hesitant about entering anywhere, okay, or being around any kind of folks or anything like that, you know. So it just okay, we're all human beings, and it's like we're all here, and you know, what's the difference, you know? Like I said, my household, when I lived in you know, when I lived in the same-sex household and I was raising my girls and stuff, there was half of the house was black, and the other half, I'm Puerto Rican, and my daughter's mixed. She's Italian and Puerto Rican. I mean, you know, so it's like, and our home was always filled with people, and they were of all shades and all nationalities and all religions, and it didn't matter, of all professions. It didn't matter. And to me, that's normal. Okay, I mean, that's normal to me. The person, I don't judge a person on the color or their religion. I judge the person on how they treat me, and if they're good, and you know, and it's just, you know, if they don't, you know, they don't have any malice, or if they have a good heart, and you know, that's what counts to me. Okay, but you know, it's just how people can divide because people don't look like them, or they don't go to the same church, or because, you know, or they go to different schools, or, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, to me, it's just, you know, it's mind-boggling to me. Okay.
Well, you know, you're not the only one. I mean, I've talked to more and more people who sort of say, like, well, I'm okay now, but they are feeling that fear, you know, because
yeah.
mm-hmm. it's just been like stirred up that it's okay to say these things. And you see it all the time, you know, where people just think that it's okay for whatever, you know, it comes up, it comes mm-hmm. out, they say it, things that I'm sure, you know, if this atmosphere of vitriol wasn't about, that they would mm-hmm. think. I mean, no, but right. now they do this, and like you said, here you are on the road by yourself, and, mm-hmm. you know, it's scary. I mean, you know, it's really scary, yeah. but it shouldn't I mean, you be. Get, you should be right. living your dream.
I should be living my dream. That's like, exactly, you know, but it's okay. I'm taking care of my health and whatnot, and I just want to make sure that when I do set back out again that I'm in good shape, and I'm taking this opportunity to do that so that after November things clear up and I can see that you know, attitudes are changing and stuff out here, then I can proceed my journey and whatnot, you know. But I don't want to wind up in some little, you know, little town somewhere in Mississippi and disappear, uh-huh. you know. You know, it's like, you know, that's not what I feel like doing, okay? And I don't want to have to be thinking about stuff like that, you know? So it's just, yeah, it's to me, it's, you know, I'm 70 years old, and it's like I've never, ever thought like this before. And I said, well, geez, I picked the wrong time to be out here, you know? Mm-hmm. I could have been safely at home in Clarksville, Georgia. But I knew my neighbors. They were different than me, yes. They thought different than me, yes, but we had something in common. We were neighbors, and when we needed each other, we were there to help each other, okay? They were mostly Republicans, okay? I had one Democrat across the street, okay? But they never, when I put my signs up in the lawn, they never took them down, okay? They mm-hmm. knew I was a Democrat. They knew I was a lesbian. They knew that all my neighbors knew, okay? But that didn't keep them from, Betty, can you help me with this? Betty, can I borrow your mower? Betty, you need anything? Okay, you know, that never kept them from, you know, or us from helping each other and watching out for each other, okay? So that's the environment that I want to be able to feel that I'm in. I don't care what your politics are. I really don't, okay? I don't care what your religion is. I just want mm-hmm. you to be able to let me live, regardless. You know, I'm Puerto Rican. You know that I'm a lesbian. You know, I'm a single female. The men were always very respectful there in Habersham. My neighbors, they never were disrespectful or anything like that. You know, they were curious and they would ask me, what, you know, the relatives or some of my neighbors, they didn't know what a Puerto Rican was. that's where that happened. You know, they asked me, you know, what was I, you know. And the guy didn't know what Puerto Rican was. They didn't know that I was a United States citizen. And they said, well, since when, you know? But that's the same thing. But that's the same thing that's happening now, you know, because people just, they don't teach about Puerto Rico in school. They don't teach about, you know, how we won, you know, Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands and the Philippines and Guam and, you know, these are all, you know, Philippines are no longer because they declared their independence, but they're all part of the United States of America. You know, it's like they're citizens, and people don't know that. They're so close closed into their own little world, you know, and it doesn't expand to be, you know, very far. So they don't know that there's another world out there. Okay, that's and it's a shame. It's a shame because, I mean, a lot of the people that are out here camping and stuff, some of them have been, you know, the Europeans have been, you know, of course they're from Europe and they come here, but they know a lot more about our history than the American people that
I meet. Yeah, than many Americans, you know.
Right. They don't know our history. They don't know, you know, they just, you know, they travel from state to state and they see the sights and the waterfalls and the this and the rain, you know, whatever is in that state that they're supposed to see, you know, they go and see that. But they haven't been to Europe. Now, I haven't been to Europe either, but I haven't asked. It's on my bucket list. I'm hoping to go, but I know a lot of Europeans, so I've learned a lot through them about how life is and what some of their customs are and stuff, you know. And, I've always had the aspiration of going to another country to visit or to live. I mean, I don't see myself always living in the United States of America. I just, you know, that's just something that, you know, how you sort of kind of perceive things and you say, oh, well, you know, someday, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, Costa Rica is still on the agenda, you know, and But I slowed up because my, you know, at my mom's death, in May, I finally got back to her gravesite, and I was able to get that out of my system because I hadn't been back to the gravesite. And that's one of the things that detained me in Florida, because my whole thing was, my journey was to go back down to the gravesite because she's buried in Miami. And I hadn't been able to do that in the last 2 years because when she passed, it was sudden. And it was hard to deal with. It was hard to deal because she was supposed to be with me traveling. Yeah, and so I have her. I named my RV after her, and I have her picture up on the wall so that I can talk to her all the time. Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the things, you know, that we were promised, you know, when someone came aboard to make America great again, and how great it was going to be for people. And here you are, you're retired. You should be living your dream. How has that impacted you as far as health care, economics, housing?
I live in my RV, okay, and what I did is I joined up all the camping networks, a lot of them. I have like three of them, and I pay my little maintenance. One I paid outright so that I have full usage of that. I just pay like $45 a month on that for maintenance, but I can camp for free, okay, and that includes my electric, my water, and my sewage. All right, so I can park at parks sometimes for 3 weeks, and then other parks I can park for 2 weeks. So I have several parks here in this area that I just go back and forth, you know, make a round robin, you know. Uh-huh. And I park for free, and I pay my little maintenance every month and stuff on the things. And economics, it's fine. I mean, I buy my food, and I get my propane so I can have my hot water. Because the RV is self-contained. I have a stove, I have a shower, sink, you know. It's a self-contained, you know, I have a queen-size bed.
Uh-huh.
So it's self-contained, and it's smaller, you know, than what I'm used to and stuff. But it's me and my dogs, you know, two little guys. And I have their little kennels. I have their kennels situated where I don't use the kennels for anything except that if they want to go in and rest, they do. I don't lock the doors on them or anything, but it's just, you know, I have my TVs, one in the living room, one in the bedroom. It's, you know, I have my Sirius radio. I listen to it on my cell phone. I have my laptop. I don't use as much because I use most of the stuff I do on my cell phone. So because I have that unlimited thing, the senior plan from T-Mobile. which is very inexpensive, and after like 20 something odd years with Straight Talk, I switched this year to T-Mobile because they had the unlimited, you know, and it was only like $5 more than when I was staying with Straight Talk, and they give you more stuff, you know, they give you more stuff. Plus, I can tether my phone with them, so I could actually get my laptop up and run it off my phone. I used to be paying for a hotspot, so I don't have to pay for the hotspot anymore. So economically, I mean, you know, and you know, like I said, I have my little stash put away for emergencies and stuff, thanks to my mom, because there was an inheritance from that, and that's inside. That was the stash, and I have my pension from New York City and my Social Security, and that gets me through everything. I get pay my bills, and I'm doing okay with that, and. There's a lot less to do than when you're like out, you know, like in a real, like, you know, living in a house and stuff, but more sure, like smaller things to do. There's a lot of maintenance on the RV. You have to make sure your septic tank is always clean. You got to make sure your caulking is in place, because otherwise the water will start leaking in, and, you know, RVs, water is the biggest enemy. I just replaced my awning yesterday. I got a brand new awning on the front, and it looks real pretty because they finally matched it up with the color of the stripes on the RV itself.
Uh-huh.
Before it was the one that they had replaced it previously when I you know, that was on there when I bought the thing, was not, you know, color coordinated. So that lasted 2 years, but it started ripping up, drying out. So it's just so now I have a new one out there as of yesterday, and I did have a mishap where my rear window was shattered, I should say, by a mowing guy at one of the other campgrounds. So I'm still waiting for the replacement window, because it was the rear escape window, and it was a special order that it's just not just a window that they can put up there. They have to put in the original kind of thing, so they had to order it. And I've been waiting since July 1st for that.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I have the insurance. Yeah, but you know, other than I'm doing okay. You know, it's a good life. I think it's a good life. I like it. You know, but I do miss my stationery. You know, I do miss my having that place to say I'm going to go home, because I'm actually traveling in home. You know, but I'm a settling kind of person. You know, every time I go somewhere and. That I'm just going to be here a couple of years, you know. I wound up being in Georgia for 21 years, and I came down just to visit, okay, when I first came down to Georgia. I wound up living there for 21 years, and that was not the intention, you know. So I've only lived in New York and in Georgia, and now I'm in the RV, and I'm 70, you know, so it's just...
All right. Well, 70 is a new something. I don't know what, but you know.
I know, I keep trying to say it's the new 50, but they keep telling me no, it's new 60. I know, 60, 50.
Like 50. I like it.
Yeah.
I want to thank you for talking with us. We're going to talk again after November. We're both going to be really busy. And trying to get all of these great people elected and getting people out there to vote.
Absolutely.
And I'm with you, you know. There's no reason why you cannot get to the polls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, there's no reason. There's no reason at all. But one of the things I do miss is my activism. I'm going to try to get I looked up some of the Democratic parties down here, and I'm going to try to see if I can hook into one of them and, you know, through November, so I can sort of kind of do something so I can feel, you know, that I'm doing something, because I'm going to drive up for a few days to Georgia to vote in November.
Uh-huh.
I'm just going to drive up in the car. I'm not taking the whole RV up there.
You've got two really exciting races, and one in Florida, Georgia. I mean, you're going to have to find a way to split yourself between the two.
I know. I said it'd be great to see if I can get some activists from Georgia and Florida together so that we can do round robins back and forth, you know? Because it goes southern, you know, to southern Georgia and then to northern Florida, you could do round robins, you know, for canvassing and talking and just going around spreading the word. And, you know, that would be so great to, you know, to see something like that, you know. But it's going to be an amazing election, I think. It's going to be like, I think we're going to see a change. I have a lot of hope for it. It's just, it has to happen. It has to happen.
Well, I think I agree with you. And from your lips to the polling booths, to every
to the polling booth.
Ears,
there you go. There you go.
Every voter's ears. Well,
that's
Betty,
right.
you stay well. You travel safely.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to rant on and talk.
You can always count on me for giving you that platform.
All right.
So
thank you. Thank you. Appreciate you.
Definitely after the election.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
You have a good
evening.
All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
I want to thank today's guest, Betty Covertier. Safe travels, Betty. Thank you for always providing that alternative perspective. You can listen to this or past episodes of the show on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, or Blog Talk Radio. Be sure and follow Collections by Michelle Brown Blog Radio on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And let us know if you have a suggestion for a guest or topic for a future show. Join us next week when I'll introduce you to another amazing individual living between the lines, standing boldly in the crosshairs of your intersectionality, and creating change right here on Collections by Michelle Brown. Thank you for listening.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.